Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Boyd, joined for the first time in a long time by Ty Zanders. Ty, last night you tweeted about your hair being so long that you weren't going to throw shots at Quinn Kesnick, whose hair looked just, we're going to come out and say it, ridiculous, as he made his return to the airwaves, broadcasting Major League Lacrosse on Sunday afternoon. But that's a little bit of a glimpse into how you handled life in the quarantine. Generally speaking, how are you? How are you holding up?
I'm doing well. You know, it's nice to have a bit of normalcy. You know, every now and then, I suppose, just being back in the fields, it's a hell of a feeling. So, you know, certainly a summer that is very different from summers past. Having spent, you know, about a dozen of these on the fields, you know, with coaches and you know, definitely a different vibe. But just very, very happy we can salvage it and get these kids looks and do it in a safe environment. But yeah, you know, definitely just jumping from event to event and have a good time and watch some good lacrosse. There's no doubt that it's just you can tell these kids are having a ball being back out there and able to play.
So you've gotten an opportunity to get on to the sideline of a handful of events, and we'll talk about those as the podcast progresses. We've also put out the bat signal for questions from folks, so we're going to handle those as well. I've already gotten a couple flowing in. But I wanted to start with a little bit more of a theoretical conversation, and really it's about the changing landscape and the unknown. And obviously, this is the IL Preps podcast. During the spring, we talk about high school lacrosse. During the summer, we talk about recruiting. And the season having been canceled has very much changed the complexion of these conversations. But they've created new conversations and new questions. And so, you know, one of the biggest things that we followed throughout the spring and early summer was the extension of the NCAA recruiting dead period, which means a lot of different things. It means no contact to some extent. It means no on-campus visiting. It means no evaluation. And it got extended incrementally through the summer. So, you know, first it was extended through June 30th and then July 31st and then through August. And now we don't know when it will be lifted. But what it essentially means is that college coaches are evaluating via video and having conversations. And we've seen movement in the class of 2021, which we're going to talk about as well. But without real clarity around what college lacrosse looks like going forward, how are you just thinking about this kind of idea of recruiting? Is it more just in the absence of knowing what is coming next, we might as well just move forward more or less as we always have in terms of building classes in the, or, you know, building a class of 2021 and getting ready to build a class of 2022?
Yeah, no, it's, you know, obviously there's been so many unanswerable questions these last few months. I think that's kind of been one of the themes. And I think it's been, you know, hard to know exactly what to say about the recruiting landscape in some senses, just because it's changing, you know, more rapidly than ever. You know, I mean, we could record this in a week and, you know, we could have, you know, more clarity, less clarity, whatever. So, I think, you know, the bottom line is that it's important to play. It's important to get coaching. It's important to get film. And, you know, I think, you know, first and foremost, and it should have started with this, these players should all be playing because they love the game and it's what they, you know, enjoy doing the most, you know, not to get film, not to get recruited. You know, that's always been my advice, but there's, you know, definitely a feeling that it's important to get film, you know, for these coaches, because you don't know when it's going to end. You don't know what the fall is going to look like. You know, so I think it's been cool to watch this 22 class. And I think, for the 21s, I feel for them in many ways, because even if you're impressing all these coaches on film, you can't get on campus. But, you know, right now I know that a lot of guys are going through this film and some are enjoying it, I'm sure, very weird. And some are, you know, certainly complaining about, having to evaluate, you know, via film and, you know, the ADD and the, lack of roster organization, all that. But, you know, right now, I do think it's been a pretty solid recruiting environment and about to head to a tournament in a few hours. But, you know, kind of just, you know, glad they can get back on the field. And it is a really weird vibe because you don't know what's going to happen. None of us know what it's going to look like in a week or 2 weeks. And I really feel like a lot of coaches and staffs are going to take their time. I think we'll see a rush for the top 22s. And I think we will see some more 21 movement, but I think it's all going to kind of have a slow timeline, you know, regardless of any dead period, you know, being extended. I just think that a lot of it's going to go slower than usual and have to prepare for that.
I'm really glad that you started that response the way you did, because I feel like that's a message that can't be said frequently enough or loudly enough or too much or too loudly. And that is that, you know, particularly in a summer when you weren't able to play in the spring, to the extent that folks are comfortable that it can be done in a safe environment where you don't increase your likelihood of contracting COVID-19, it's important to play because you want to play. And it's important to be mindful of the fact that a lot of these players are choosing to play because they want to play. And I hope that if we can find any type of small silver lining that lasts into the future, that this moment reduces a little bit of the transactional nature that, you know, we've seen dominate summer lacrosse for decades, which is, you know, I play in order to get something, a college admission spot or a, you know, partial scholarship or whatever the case may be.
The end result.
Exactly, exactly. And it refocuses why you play on competing, enjoying the game, and enjoying spending time with your teammates.
Absolutely. You know, I think I couldn't agree more. I think that, you know, one of, you know, a pretty memorable moment, I think, was, you know, being down in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, and at Junior's Open, and just the overall, you know, vibe there, because this was really the first time these kids had played, you know, organized lacrosse and all that. I think we were all just, you know, found it hard to stop smiling. And I think, you know, that's a reminder of why you do it. You know, you hear it so much. It is the medicine game, and this is a healer. You know, I mean, so many things have been taken away from all of us. So I think just the overall enjoyment that comes with, you know, playing the game, watching the game, if you're a parent, just, you know, kind of keeping in mind that, you know, I think just not having to think of, you know, try and keep your mind off the recruiting process and all that, and just kind of go back to enjoying watching your son or daughter play. You know, I think it can be hard to do, but when something's taken from you, just enjoy it that much more. So I always, you know, try and remind people of that. And I know that, you know, in my world, I'm out there cause I love the game. I miss it. I've always, you know, taken pride in the amount that I watch, probably, you know, more lacrosse games than anyone, but, this is not a job. I'm not doing it because I, for the rankings or whatever it is, I do it cause I love it. And I think that everyone else has to as well, and not think about the end result, because it is very daunting. It is, you know, I mean, someone just asked over Twitter, what's the best advice for an uncommitted 2021 right now? And I think it's so hard to know. And we kind of touched on that, but, you know, I think just kind of stay focused on improvement in all aspects, and be patient. You know, I think a lot of these players may wind up somewhere they wouldn't normally wind up, you know, and I think that'll, you know, benefit some programs, but it's a pretty wild landscape right now, and so much uncertainty that, you know, I think it's hard not to be anxious, but you kind of have to just stay the course.
So one thing you brought up that I wanted to dig a little deeper on before we get into the specifics of the events that you've attended is the way in which college coaches, particularly Division I and Division II coaches who are not allowed to get out on the road, are adapting to watching film. Certainly, as soon as the extension of this dead period was announced, event operators and clubs and directors shifted their focus toward making sure that they had a good video solution. And that means a number of different things, depending on the event. So, you know, one of the first questions that was asked is the difference between live streaming and watching via video on demand. And my personal opinion on that is that live streaming is a good option for an event that is highly newsworthy and people want to know the outcome of as quickly as possible, or people want to watch in real time and can't be there. But if it is less valuable for evaluation, because one of the things that so many coaches say is that the ability to rewind and fast forward and be more efficient in your evaluation is actually more valuable than seeing the outcome as it actually happens. Do you have a point of view on live streaming versus being able to rewind and fast forward?
Oh yeah, no. I mean, personally, I'm actually not a huge fan of the live stream. I think it's too unreliable in this given the situation. I feel like it's you can't always count on a live stream. I remember watching a game that I chose not to attend that was about 45 minutes away, and I was texting a coach going back and forth. We both said, look, I feel like we haven't been able to watch even 30 seconds of uninterrupted lacrosse, without until the fourth quarter. So, I think just the overall benefit of, like you said, being able to fast forward, rewind, slow down, skip to the next half if you want to watch that second half goalie, watch just the offensive possessions, whatever it is. I do feel like, just like so many other things, it has its pros and cons. But when it comes to a live stream, I think there's a lot more, negatives than positives. I think just focus on, if you're an event, just focus on getting the film out, have it be clear, have the rosters organized. Just I think that's just the best way to get it out there is just, on demand, after the fact.
So you mentioned obviously being able to identify which player is which, and I can tell you that there is nothing more frustrating than seeing a player that you really like and not knowing who it is, and not knowing how to get in contact with that player, not knowing whether that player is already committed somewhere else. So no question that, as ever, the burden is incredibly high on making sure that accurate identification is available. But kind of taking that for granted, what are some of the things that you think are gained, and what are some of the things that you think are given up when it comes to a entire landscape, an entire class being evaluated almost exclusively via video?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fantastic question. I think that everyone's kind of, still figuring it out, and no one really has a real sense of, what they want their timeline to be because of the, ever-changing landscape. But I know that, I still feel that, the top players, in the 22 class may go a little, may go quick. But I do think that all this will kind of, these guys will take their time. I think heading into the summer, it was certainly fascinating to ask some of these guys, how they were going to go about everything. And like I'm constantly saying, it's all changing. I'm sure their answers would be different from week to week, but I know a lot of guys are really adamant about how, they don't want to make offers and all that until they're able to watch these players live. And I understand it, but at the same time, you're not going to be able to sit back and wait on a lot of these top players. So, everyone's different. I think that, there are definitely a lot of guys out there that find this frustrating because there is, there is a tremendous advantage. And I'm fortunate in that sense to be able to be out there. There is an advantage to be able to watch all this live. I think you get a really good sense of how the kid and how a player communicates. I think you get a better sense of the size and kind of athlete they are. I know there's been plenty of kids that I think, I don't see as being very big on film, and then I see him in person. I'm like, oh, he's bigger than I thought, or other way around. So I think, just to be able to see that and the body language and how they interact with each other and all of that. I mean, but at the same time, I think that some important qualities you can see is hustle, compete factor. I think those are some of the most important attributes for any recruit. When a coach is watching, a game, whether live or via film, I think is just seeing a player who plays hard. I mean, I've seen a lot of guys that I think have just been slowing down. You can tell they're exhausted, especially. And we'll get into that, especially in the third game of the day. And there's a huge difference without a high school season, but they're still playing hard. And you can see that in person or on film. So, I think, like I said, just a lot of pros and cons to this whole thing. But I really feel like, it changes things on so many levels. I know that if I was a 15, 16, 17-year-old and I look over and I see, say, Jeff Tamburoni, Andy Shea, Lars Tiffany, whoever it is on the sidelines, maybe I'm playing a little bit different. Maybe I'm a little more nervous. So yeah, a lot of negatives and positives, but I do feel like a lot of these coaches will want to see these players live. We just don't know when that's going to be.
Right. No, it's a lot of what you said is accurate and resonates in the sense that being able, communication, compete level. I think it's interesting and somewhat counterintuitive that I agree with you. I think you get a better sense for a player's kind of athletic traits watching at field level and being able to, you get a better sense of the comparison. Certainly of size, whether that's height or frame, as well as some of the finer details of speed, strength and power, agility, quickness, and explosiveness. But it's interesting in the sense that I was talking to Jamie Monroe about this yesterday, and he used a phrase that I think it really kind of struck a chord, which is when you're watching live, sometimes you see things that you think you saw, but it's not until you're able to see them on video that you can be certain as to whether or not you saw it. And so when it comes to some of the skill details, whether it's footwork for a defenseman or the ability to make the right pass for an offensive player, or even some of the types of, how did when did he choose to use which dodge, or how did he release his shot? Where did that, how was that goalie identifying who the shooter was and where the ball was going to be coming from? Those are some of the things, some of the lacrosse specific details that actually do provide advantages when you're watching on film. But one of the things that's a little bit flipped about this process is typically, particularly if you're a Division One coach, the funnel starts, the widest part of the funnel is, can this player play Division One lacrosse from an athletic standpoint? And so being able to survey a group of 1,000 to 2,000, maybe more players and quickly winnow them down to the, couple hundred players that you think actually have the athletic attributes to be able to play at your program, that's typically how the summer begins. And then you spend the rest of the summer watching. So it's basically, to use the fishing or hunting analogy, you begin at the beginning of the summer with either a net or a shotgun, and then as the summer moves along, you pull out the rifle or you pull out the fishing rod. And the video is essentially better used for the second stage of things. And my conversations with college coaches who have tried to use video as a way to, just watch a game and pick out the five to six players who are the most impressive athletically, that's where it becomes really daunting. And to the point that you made about ADD, really easy to get distracted. And all of a sudden you kind of realize or figure out or decide, man, I just wasted a bunch of time. And I think that's a challenge. And I think that just like everything else, the staffs who figure out a solution to reduce the frequency that that happens are going to be the ones that are best off coming away from this summer.
Exactly, and that's extremely well put. I couldn't agree more with a lot of those points. I think that it really has been interesting to have these conversations with different coaches to see how they're doing with all this, because I'm just trying to put myself in their shoes. I cannot imagine doing my job solely off of film, and watch these players solely off of film. I think that I have always been someone who I as mentioned, I want to watch in person, and I think that as much as possible when time allows, I want to watch games in person, and then see the film as well, because you do pick up on so much more. But it's going to be interesting. I'm really fascinated to see how many misses we see in comparison to the past, and we don't know how this is all going to work, but it really has been a fascinating summer, a few months, on many accounts. And someone just asked as we're recording this, has the development of 21s and 22s noticeably suffered from missing out in the high school season? That's, to me, that's a hard question to answer. I feel like it has. I think that the first few events were a little sloppy. I think that the most noticeable difference to me has really just been the overall endurance, the fatigue. I really feel like I didn't notice in the past. It's absolutely different to, I think when you see a player play his third game of the day, or sixth or seventh of the weekend, whatever it is. They're so much more, well conditioned because of the high school season. I think that You know, for me, watching a player on the second or third game of the day, you know, fourth, fifth hour of lacrosse, playing lacrosse, that's where I really noticed a huge gap relative to the past. Because when you're playing every single day and practicing at a high level, getting coached at a high level, playing at a high level, being pushed by your teammates, I think that it's just, I've seen just a huge, huge difference. Now, I think without that high school season, it's hard, and these kids are dragging and, you know, not used to the heat. And I can't, you know, stress this enough. There's no way to simulate game shape. You just can't. You can run on a treadmill as long as you want. You can run as much as you want. You know, whatever it is, you can dial in your skills on the wall and, you know, shooting and do footwork drills, but there's nothing that you can do to simulate playing a game and running up and down and being chased, you know, by a guy with a 6 foot, you know, 6 foot stick, because you haven't had that. I think that development, I haven't seen that yet. You know, because I still want to see more and more, and haven't watched a ton of 21s. I think we'll see that going forward. You know, a year from now, I'll be able to notice a big difference. But I the biggest difference to me has definitely been the stamina and all that. And I think from some non-hotbed players, some you know, I think they may suffer in some ways, because they could probably use the coaching. I've noticed some IQ pieces that have been missing that usually aren't. So I think that's how I'd answer that question, and it's a good one. But as mentioned, I think it's something that we can revisit in a year, and we'll have a much better sense of. What are your thoughts there?
I want to weigh in on that too, and you're turning into a podcast host, because that was exactly the last place I wanted to go in terms of general questions before we get into Juniors Open. But so I would say I agree with you. It's very difficult to know what the loss of a season means for these players, because we can only compare them against each other, and everybody is on the same playing field. It is nearly impossible to transport ourselves back 365 days and try to imagine what these players, the equivalent to these players, looked like, having come off of, you know, I mean, keep in mind, we're recording this on July 20th. This summer is basically over in a traditional year at this point, but coming off of a spring season and then a June and July. So that's the first thing, is I think you kind of need to take our opinion with like a moderate grain of salt, just because it is very difficult to try to compare this to prior years or an imagined typical year. The second thing I would say is I didn't have the same reaction to fatigue that you did, probably largely because I was focused less on the player stamina and more on, are we seeing, does it feel like we're seeing more soft tissue injuries, as people talked about that being a risk of this kind of sudden and abrupt return to play? And I would say that we haven't, at least on the basis of being at the Isle Invitational last week for 3 days. I did not notice an increase in players leaving the game because of what looked like a hamstring or a quad or, you know, a back muscle or anything like that. You know, I thought we saw a typical number of the typical types of injuries, whether they be from big hits or slashes or rolled ankles, a couple of non-contact injuries, those types of things. So from a physicality standpoint, I would say, I don't want to say I didn't notice the fatigue. I'm just kind of reiterating the prior point, which is that, like, I have a hard time remembering how different. I mean, players always look more tired at the third game of the day, and I just don't have a good sense of how much more tired they look. I will absolutely concede and believe that they are more tired than they would have been typically. But the last
Well,
point I
I'll
would.
interject really quickly. I will say that I've noticed that, and I hate cutting you off, but I think to clarify, I
Sure.
think that I that is come that is coming off of back-to-back events is where I've
Right.
noticed it. I think, you know, when you're you, the players are usually very used to going from event to event, you know, but then when you remember, I mean, watching some players this week that came from Isle Invitational, or you know, came from Summer Showdown, wherever it was, and then had to, you know, play more and more. That's when I saw it, you know, in comparison to years past, you know, not just one tournament with a few off days. I think that's probably an important clarification.
So the last point I wanted to make about rustiness is I actually think that there were kind of like a degree of rustiness. So I thought that from a skills standpoint, the passing, particularly the accuracy of 10 to 15 to 20 yard passes, particularly when your feet are moving, was really, really lacking early. I thought that was the skill that you saw take the longest to come back. I thought that the skill that was, I don't know, more moderately affected was the time and room shooting and the accuracy of time and room shooting. I thought that that was not as good as typical, but also not necessarily as bad as those passing with your feet moving. And then the thing I would say I felt like was relatively unaffected, I was very impressed by the ground ball play. I thought that players picking up the ball off the ground and getting to space was not noticeably worse than in prior years. So I don't know, file that away in terms of the types of skills and how they degrade versus how quickly they come back when you actually do get back into game action. That was kind of what I saw. The most affected was passing while moving your feet. The most moderately affected was mid-range shooting, and the least affected was ground ball play.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree.
So we've been teasing it for a while now. We might as well get into it. This summer featured a very unique first event. It was the Juniors Open held in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. It was exclusively for boys in the class of 2022. It was a six-team individual registration event where each team had two prominent high school coaches on the sideline. And then in addition to that, you were one of four evaluators along with Dave Cottle, Rick Soule, and Rick Beardsley, who were giving out, I don't know, commendations, essentially spotlighting impressive performances. And it was a really, really interesting event. I don't necessarily have a question, so the floor is yours. What was your takeaway from Juniors Open?
Yeah, I mean, I was just thrilled to be there and be a part of it. It was I've been looking forward to it for a while, and you know, I think just like just talking about the summer landscape and having done this for a while, like I travel a lot, but it's a lot of the same places, and it's a lot of, you know, Philly, Baltimore, Delaware, you know, Long Island in the summer, you know, Connecticut here and there, but to kind of just be in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, in the middle of the Smoky Mountains, a place where I'd never been, and just the most beautiful backdrop. You know, again, I guess there's a reason they call them the Smoky Mountains. It was gorgeous in the morning. It was just a great vibe out there. I think I said this earlier, but I'll reiterate. Like, I think everyone was just fired up to be playing again. To you know, just walking around the drills and all that. Just seeing, you know, good friends that are, you know, phenomenal coaches, guys like Brian Kelly, Joe Spolina, Gino Briaco, John Nostrand, you know, the Gavazzan brothers, you know, who've been all over the landscape this summer. I think everyone was just, you know, very, very happy and relieved to be doing what they love again. And it was a very unique event, you know, put together by you know, a number of fathers who are you know, known in the lacrosse world and relying on some connections to fill the event. And you know, I think with Maverick Showtime being an absence of the summer calendar, you know, which is you know, certainly the best individual event, you know, these last 5, 10, you know, years or so, it was important to have an event like this that you know, true kids from all over playing together in an individual showcase setting. And you kind of threw in the coaching, and I think that was really an important aspect of it. Was you really? I've always found it paramount to focus on a coaching and instructional drills, you know, feature of an event. I think having that is awesome, but it is so much more necessary when you haven't had the high school season. So to be able to put some man up, you know, man down, you know, set plays and all that. And work together and build chemistry and receive that coaching. I think that was, you know, paramount in setting the stage for a high level of play, and I really enjoyed that. So yeah, it was a great event. I learned a lot. I really feel like, you know, as you mentioned, you know, I always spend the first few weeks of the summer, or first few days really, Under Armour tryouts or you know, events in non-hotbeds or whatever it is, on just kind of building a list and just, you know, marking some kids down and just watching them and adding them to the database and just, you know, getting them on my radar. Ones that, you know, I kind of built a board of about 125 players and got to see a lot of players for the first time and got to see, you at the Juniors Open, and then a lot of guys that I hadn't seen that I had recommendations for, and you know, watched some of their highlights and film, and you know, I think that was really cool to kind of see where they were. And I really felt like I walked away from that event with a much better sense of the class of 22. So it was a success, and you know, been fun just to follow these kids, you know, these last few weeks, and kind of, you know, there's such a big benefit to be able to see a player, you know, certainly in the high school season, but more so with our current situation, to watch a player at an individual event. See how he fits in and asserts himself, because you always kind of have a few players that maybe were told by their fathers to shoot when they have the ball, or to, you know, to be assertive and be aggressive and all that. You know, I always want to see how an individual fares in the individual showcase, and then the role they play when they're with their club team or high school team. I think that's a fascinating piece of it. I've seen a lot of guys play very different roles from you know, spot to spot, and it does, you know, matter so much who you're paired with. But you know, I think that was a tremendous benefit to be able to compare and contrast individual versus club. But yeah, it was a good time, and I think just a stellar, you know, way to begin, and a really good crew. I can't say enough good things about the guys that I was with, and it's been a blast. You know, seeing a few of them, you know, Coach Petro, Coach Soul, you know, Coach Cottle, Joe Spallina, a lot of guys in attendance at a number of events this summer. So it was a really good week, and I'm glad that it was a part of this this calendar.
Any particular standouts that weren't mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, I can't say it enough. Joey Spallina and Don Petromaller are as good as advertised, and always impressive. And you know, throwing in Truett Sunderland as well. I know that there were some folks out there that weren't, you know, thrilled about those three being put in the same attack. They're three of the most well thought of attackmen in the class. But you know, I think, you know, there were pros and cons of that as well. I think it was, for a lot of people that hadn't watched much lacrosse, it was really enjoyable to watch those three, you know, ball out together. You know, but definitely feel like, you know, Dominic and Joey, you know, Dom being a lefty attackman from Boys Latin and playing with a number of clubs, you know, Coopers and Annapolis Hawks, and then Joey Spallina, you know, who plays with Team 91 and played up. And it feels like I've been watching for, you know, years now. I guess it's been probably 5 or 6 years. You know, I really feel like those guys are, you know, going to be the two most coveted players in the class. So they were excellent, but the biggest takeaway is this really, you know, this has to be the best and deepest goalie position, in years, you know, definitely as long as I've been doing this. I feel like every Division I, you know, top 20 caliber school will get a stud. And I don't think there's that much of a drop off between the goalies that I have 1, 2, 3 and 9, 10, 11 and so on. So I really can't say enough good things about this goalie class. And, you know, watching the keepers at the Juniors Open, I really felt like it was as strong of a performance from that position that I've ever seen an event. And, you know, of course, I have to tip my hat to Andrew, Mike Voss, and Goalie Smith, who was working with them, you know, down there. And I've spent a lot of time with this summer. You know, they know these keepers with the back of their hand and making them better. And I think it was just a pleasure to watch these goalies. They're off the charts this year.
So moving along, the I believe second event that you were able to attend was, as we previously mentioned, the Isle Invitational, which was hosted from last Tuesday to Thursday at the DE Turf Complex in Frederica, Delaware. That was an adjustment from originally being scheduled in Maryland, but due to all of the reopening procedures and expectations, we felt like it was prudent to make that move. It was really interesting in terms of working with the State Department of Health as well as the venue on what types of pre-event communication of policies and protocols were going to be necessary in order to ensure that we were doing all that could reasonably be done in order to create an environment that was as safe as could be expected. Mask wearing was mandated, and I would say very well respected, including while sitting on the sideline, in addition to requesting that folks from different households stay 6 feet apart, requesting that folks limit their spectators to one family member per player, and trying to build a schedule that was as conducive to spending as little time on site as possible. The event was predominantly populated by teams from the Mid-Atlantic region, but there were a handful of teams from outlying areas as well. And we're really pleased with how everything emerged. Certainly, those of you that have watched or checked out the coverage on InsideLacrosse.com in the last few days have seen that Sweet Lacs National and Maryland Rough Riders kind of carried the day in both the 2021 and 2022 divisions. You and I were able to watch that 22 game. We in A effort to make the schedule as conducive to getting on site as quickly and off site as possible, chose not to play a tournament format. But we were fortunate in both the 22 and 23 division that the two undefeated teams in each division on the final day were scheduled to play each other. And so we were able to watch that Sweet Lacs National team play Maryland Rough Riders in the 22 division. And what a defensive slugfest that was. The first roughly 20 minutes of the game went scoreless. Sweet Lacs built a 4-2 lead. Rough Riders came back and tied it at four, and then Sweet Lacs got two goals late in order to kind of secure a quasi-championship 6-4. But between them and the 2021 group, a lot of really high-end talent. What were your impressions of the Isle Invitational?
Yeah, I mean, I was, you know, first off, just really pleased with how it went in terms of overall safety and you know, the measures that everyone, you know, took. And I think I'm just, you know, really, I was relieved in that sense. And I knew we'd do a good job with it. And you know, I'd hope that people would be smart and you know, cautious with everything. And I thought that was a main takeaway. Glad that we were able to, you know, create that. But overall, I think that, you know, as you mentioned, I really enjoyed watching that Rough Riders group and that Sweet Lacs group, you know, and hope they get to play again. I thought that, in terms of Rough Riders, it's a club that's been around, you know, for quite some time. They've had, you know, so many notable players, and you know, to me, it can still be a club that, for whatever reason, is overlooked, and sometimes that's because of the roster makeup and the land, you know, just the way that Baltimore Lacrosse is structured. You know, private schools, you know, reign supreme in so many ways, but. You know, coached by, you know, Brian Reese, you know, the head coach there and Scott Steers and my man Tom Huttman, you know, helped out as well. It's really got that strong public school flavor and blue collar, you know, a huge Catonsville presence. I know, you know, K.R. Schultz does a great job with the Comets program and, you know, guys like James Asbill and Brian Ruppel and Chris Huttman are excellent, you know, from that program. So, really like that group and just a fun game, that de facto championship and you know, really just enjoyed watching Rough Riders, Sweet Lacs. I thought FCA 2021 group had a, you know, some studs. You know, I liked what we saw from Midwest Top Gun, some Project Midwest guys that I hadn't really seen before. So, you know, overall impressions, you know, I felt really good walking away about some of the clubs that we had there and excited to keep it rolling and watch more. But you know, there's no doubt that, you know, we feel pretty good about what was put together and you know, I'm fired up for these coaches to be able to, you know, put on this film and you know, get these kids some looks.
That is a nice opportunity to bring up one of our questions that was asked to us on Twitter from Old School Jones. And you already mentioned it, but what is the best advice that you would give an uncommitted 2021 right now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, started to answer it, and I think it is, you know, definitely tough to answer. But you know, I think just keep playing and keep, you know, making that, you know, building a list of schools. And I think, you know, more than ever, like just be patient. I think that just be patient in terms of you know, each school's, you know, timeline. You know, they don't know what they're gonna do. You know, just as much as you don't know what you're gonna do. You know, as uncommitted 21. So I think just be patient with the timeline, and visits and all that, and don't, make sure that these schools know that you're interested, but don't push them too hard. If you're a club coach, don't push them too hard. But I really feel like there will be plenty of schools that are going to be watching, through the fall. And if I had to guess, we'd see more events in September and October than, and maybe December and January than before, depending how everything shakes out. But I really feel like this is a process that's going to extend a little bit. So just kind of like stay the course, be patient. Keep building that list, take the virtual tours, build relationships when you can, but keep in mind that, these guys probably will want to see you play. We'll see what happens, if any other changes happen to the timeline. But that'd be my advice.
Yeah, I would just build on that by saying, to the extent that it's worth it to be proactive, I think it is worth it to be proactive insofar as work hard to identify both what school you would like to go to, as well as where you, whether or not that program, that school has a positional need for you, or that if they've already been filled. And obviously, if you're a goalie or a faceoff guy or a left-handed attackman, it's easier to do that than if you're, a defenseman or a midfielder or a dodging attackman. And I realize that, but you can also look at historical commitment lists and see how many guys that staff has brought in at your position in prior years, and get a sense for, whether or not, if there is somebody in your position that's going there, then maybe are they going to take two or three? And if so, reach out, express interest. One of the benefits of being a 2021, being, a rising senior, is that relative to your peers who aren't going to play college sports, who are also looking at college, relative to, the players who are a year younger than you, you have the benefit of knowing better what you want out of your college experience and out of life. And so I would say, try to use that as a tool to make a more qualified decision on the type of play that you would want to play. And certainly that goes a long way toward being true of considering playing opportunities at the Division II and Division III level. And one of the big things that's differentiated is that there will be Division III coaches on the sidelines of these recruiting events. They are allowed to get out and recruit by the NCAA's policy. Now, on a university to university basis, that might change, but there were dozens of Division III coaches at our event last week, including some notable programs and their head coaches. So, in that sense, if there is someone who, hasn't seen you and needs to see you play live, the likelihood that a Division III coach would feel more comfortable making a decision about you because he's had an ability to see you play live is higher. So those would be my kind of two pieces of advice, is as opposed to just taking the interest as it comes, spend more time figuring out where you want to play and then proactively reach out and try to identify whether or not that staff logically has a need for you. And then subsequently, also open up your mind a little bit more toward some of the other opportunities, particularly at the Division III level, where coaches in many instances are able to recruit live right now.
Yeah, and I fully agree. I think that I've always felt that Division III in particular is a tremendous option. I love that level of lacrosse, and I think you and I share the opinion that we're more intrigued with the Division III recruiting and who who commits to these schools than never before. I mean, I've noticed I recognize a ton of names. Particularly, committing to these NESCAC institutions. So, I think that's always a great option. I also say on the Division I side, it can be really challenging to figure out the depth chart because of this extra year of eligibility. So, if you're looking at a roster, if you're looking at the inside lacrosse commit list where you're seeing the outgoing players and all that in relation to the school's current commits, that's all up in the air because, some of these kids will go back. So it can be hard to know, where you may fit the depth chart, where everyone else fits, and how it's going to work. But there's no doubt that it'll be more challenging to get time to see, where you can get time. So I think just don't read too much into that because it's constantly changing. Is something that I'll add.
And as we wind down this podcast, we got to get to the most recent event that you attended, which was the Main Stage, another new event, an individual event. And this one was originally scheduled to be in Charleston, South Carolina, but was recently moved to Maryland. And you were there all weekend. What did you take away from your attendance at that event?
Yeah, so it was another, individual showcase, put on by MLA Events, Sweet Lax, a huge part of that, the same staff. And, Coach Dave Petromala was a director as well. And, I think it was great to be back out there and see a lot of names that I was able to see at the Juniors Open or other events and, watch these players get coached and have some individual attention. I think that the ability to work with Chase Erlin in goal and the Gavazzins from Goalie Smith, and then face off guys got to work with some guy named TD Erlin, I think, and who was providing instruction when these guys came off the field during game, and Bill Dwan, the whole Hopkins former staff, and Rick Soule, Dylan Sheridan, and I'm missing a few more names, but just a great staff to learn from, and a fun event, culminating with the All-Star game. Brock Berman took home offensive MVP honors and was just outstanding in the All-Star game and throughout. And I think that he was a player from Niskayuna, New York. His dad is the head coach of Union football. He was formerly at Stony Brook and has a connection with Joe Spallina, so he plays Team 91. Brock is a name to watch for sure. But just a lot of great players from the goalie position and a guy like Charlie Muller from Bullis at LSM and Close, a lefty that I really liked. So some kids that I hadn't seen before that I got to get some eyes on, and also some players that I got to see more of. And as mentioned, I think that there was a fatigue factor because you had a lot of these players coming from a different event, but and the heat was outrageous. But a great event that I was happy to be at, and just fun to watch a lot of these top 22s again.
And in terms of what comes next, you are hitting the road again Monday afternoon to head to Delaware to take on or take in, excuse me, the NLF summer kickoff.
Yeah, so I'm gonna get head up for that. It's gonna be at Kirkwood Soccer Complex. I'm looking forward to watching, a few teams I haven't seen yet. I think it's gonna be interesting without some of the northern NLF teams, the Leading Edges, 91s, Eclipses, Express, Lexachusetts, are all kind of, separate and doing their own play days up north. But gonna be able to get eyes on Thunder LB3 and West Coast Stars and Juice Cherries and I think Big Four, Crabs, DC Express, Hawks, a few others. So just pumped to watch some 21s and get some eyes on them and see how they developed, and then get back to the 22s, and then we're on to North American Lacrosse, next weekend, and pumped for that. But definitely nice just going from event to event, and just I think it feels a little bit more normal than it did a few weeks ago, Terry. I think especially being back in the car with you and having our long talks, talking shop and talking recruiting on the way to an event is always a highlight of my summer. So just glad to be back out here and lucky to do what I do, and lucky to have a platform. But pretty fired up for what we have ahead in IL and in our event, our another session in a few weeks. So just very relieved to be back doing what I love and watching players do what they love.
There are a couple of questions that I want to get to before we wind this down. We got a couple minutes left. Since some folks did take you up on your opportunity or your offer, excuse me, don't want to leave them hanging. This one from Ron Kirby. He wants to know, what has been the effect of the standing neutral grip on faceoff this summer for the 21s and 22s? What are the college coaches saying?
Yeah, so great question. It's funny, I haven't asked as many guys, coaches about that, but I think that from what I've seen, I've seen a lot of the top guys, do it. And I think that, shout out to Greg Granley and the Faceoff Academy for having everyone ready. But, definitely seeing a lot of players go back and forth to it. But I think that I've seen some really athletic, quick-handed guys adapt to it and dominate, and some others are still figuring out and gaining confidence with it. So, we'll see as we move forward. I think that practicing that is certainly the best way to go about it. And I hope that everyone's doing it, because I really hope that, in a few weeks, see even more of it. So I think, just to put it simply, that's what I'd say.
Yeah, I would echo that in the sense that I was actually surprised that more players weren't doing it. Now, that's not a judgment-based statement because this is still not actually a rule yet. It's just expected that it's going to become the rule.
Exactly.
And so, you know, in that very first event that we went to, the Crabs versus 91 Maryland, both players, both face-off guys were doing that pretty much exclusively. So that was just kind of the expectation that I had. But then at the events that I've been to since, I would say that, I don't know, more than 50% and probably considerably more than 50% are still going knee down with the double overhand. So it's an interesting transition, right? You got to balance, I want to win this club team game versus I want to get the best film of myself for college coaches. And I understand that. And so your point is well taken in terms of comfort level. The next one that I wanted to get to from Warren Budway, what's the impact on Canadians with the travel ban until at le the border closed until at least August 21st? Only 10 players allowed to practice at any session, no field or box game being played at all. Do you think college coaches still have Canadian 21s on their radar?
Yeah, I think they definitely do, but this is certainly a hindrance, and I feel for our good friends in the Great White North. I think that it definitely makes things more difficult, and it's been a bummer not seeing some of these Canucks down here. So it's still one of those wait and see things, and I think that the All Canada games in late August, or I think that's the 25th, the 27th in Ontario, are always a college coach favorite, and film will be huge for that. But yeah, I mean, every college coach, wants a Canadian. I think that that event will be put a strong spotlight on them. But I don't think they'll, I still think that it'll work out, and there is the reclass option. So we'll see what happens with the Canadians in that group. But I definitely feel for them.
Yeah, my only comment there is that the amount of word of mouth that tends to be really important in recruiting Canadians, I mean, that is still able to happen. So, you know, obviously the unfortunate component of the film being out of date doesn't necessarily help the folks looking for opportunities now. But at the same time, you know, college coaches are always looking for folks with the skill sets that box players bring to the field game. So the demand will remain. It's just a question of how do they parse out the supply. And then
Exactly.
the last one is probably the most important one. If you were, and this is from Man Up Lacrosse, if you were to come across a recruit that puts ketchup on his steak, do you still show interest?
Absolutely not. I think without getting into too much of a political statement here, with someone putting ketchup on their steak that represents our country. No, I would not. I think that is a wild move. Getting ketchup or a well done steak, cross them off. Cross them off. That's a no-brainer.
Ty, we really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Among other things, the food tips in your typical travel summer has been one of the things that has been a casualty of COVID-19. But as you mentioned, the ramping up of the schedule means that there will be more time on the road and hopefully more photos of ridiculous meals that you decide are what you need at that moment in time. But until next time on the Inside Lacrosse Preps podcast, we appreciate you. Give him a follow at Ty Zanders on Twitter. I'm at Terrence Foy. If you like what you heard, leave a rating and review, and we'll be back with more Inside Lacrosse podcasts later in the week.
Awesome. Thank you, Terry.